Join us now, your local State Farm agents, Kim Gardner, Chip Harvey, and we are going to plick the mints this morning, if I may say so. As you know, we email back and forth in the days coming up to this. Hey, what are we going to talk about? That sort of thing. And sometimes some of us are distracted when we are emailing, especially if we are on our phones. Is that right, Kim?
Yeah, I just was actually trying to make sure your brain was working. I wanted to challenge.
That is something worth checking into. I have to admit. But so let's talk about homeowners insurance, and especially something. That you've seen with customers in the wake of the recent tornado, as far as people, if you have a lot of personal property in your house, things that may have a great deal of their own intrinsic value, and you want to have maybe do you list those and have them, you know, itemized? Do you put those on a separate policy? What do you all recommend?
Well, there's two ways to do it, and obviously we talked about just generally going through your home and having an inventory of everything in your home, and you can do it room by room. On statefarm.com, there's actually an inventory form that just so you can just do that. But if you've got
all
really
pictures,
oh, yeah, as you say, do you take your phone,
take pictures or videos.
Mm-hmm. So you can, that's a good basic start period. But if you've got really high value, high ticket items that you want to protect, we used to say, well, what are the chances of somebody coming into your home and stealing all your things? Well, that was kind of remote. But what were the chances of having a total fire or having your house go up in a tornado? Well, now we can say, kind of remote, but it can. So those would be the things you'd want to consider isolating. And in State Farm's case, you'd put it on a separate policy, which we call a personal articles policy. Other companies allow you to endorse them onto the homeowners, but for a separate protection for those items.
So just out of curiosity, so you have the picture. And say maybe it's a picture of a woman with a very slight smile on her face, almost can't tell. Is having the picture of it enough? And say, you know, I know that sign says Louvre in the background, but that's actually my basement. You know, I mean,
what we tell them to do is, the only place around here that can do the actual appraisal of fine arts is probably the Art Museum in Richmond.
Okay.
Most people are not going to load their car up and take them down. So the next best thing you can do is take photographs of the pictures. I recommend putting like a 6-inch wooden ruler in for scale. Document very carefully who the artist is and anything else that makes that picture particularly valuable. Anything you know of it, jot it down if there's anything else. But now you've got measurements or scale to go by. You've got a picture of it. You know who the artist is, etc. And that's about the next best thing you can do if you're not going to take it somewhere and have it actually appraised.
And now, in a more serious note, though, but for things that, I mean, whether it's jewelry, firearms, electronics, all this sort of stuff, and what comparative price to save for versus regular homeowners insurance versus this separated policy, how do they compare as far as what it costs you versus what you're insuring? Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, one of the things I'd say first, though, is there's another side to it. That we're talking about high-valued items and things you want to insure, but take something like coins. First of all, every company has a limit on money, cash money, and it doesn't matter whether it's in the form of a coin collection, unless you've insured it separately. Years ago, people were buying silver dollars for $10 a piece, and maybe they had 10 of them, and if they were stolen, they saw them as you know, $100 or whatever. We saw them as $10 because it is a coin. So. Limits like that you want, limits on stamps, $2,500 on stamps, collections, it doesn't matter unless you have them itemized as a collection. So the first thing is to understand what you have limits on, and it doesn't matter how it's destroyed. Fire, theft, vandalism, doesn't make any difference. Those limits are there. So that's important, along with the things of very high intrinsic value.
And from a jewelry standpoint, you'd want to be able to look, anything that's valued at least $5,000 or more, probably you should consider putting on a separate policy.
Did you hear that, Mary?
Yeah.
You could get a zero deductible, and you could put multiple pieces of jewelry, for example, on it. And it's very affordable. And it also has what they call miscellaneous disappearance. So if you take it off and you're washing your hands and you forget to put it back on and then you can't find it,
it's disappeared.
It did. Yeah, that's the phrase, miscellaneous disappearance.
And also accidental breakage. Some of it usually is included, accidental breakage and things like that where your regular policy wouldn't cover that.
Now, Kim, let me ask you, how far do you all go when you get the miscellaneous disappearance, this accidental disappearance? Does this generally say, you know, if the person says it and their insurance is paid up, you pay it out? Is there ever anything that makes, if you're suspicious at all, or is it just, you know, here's the check?
As long as we've got documentation on what that you had it and right. what it was and it's insured under the policy, then it's eligible.
So let's just to more of this. Let us say it's completely. Someone really does lose something, you know, gardening or something like that. They get the insurance money. They replace it. 2 years later, they pull up a carrot and there's the ring. You know, what do you do at that point? Do you go back to the insurance agent and say, you know, which of these rings do you want, or do you give them back the money and keep them both? How does that
work? That's exactly right. If an honest person would say to the insurance company, I have now found my ring. And it has very high sentimental value because it was handed down through the family. And so the insurance company then says, well, do you want to keep that and give us back the ring that we paid you for or purchased for you? Or do you want to keep the new one and give us the old one? So it's that type of thing.
And do not laugh. I had a guy that had a rifle that belonged to his grandfather, and it was stolen. And we went. We handled that under his homeowners because it was a documented theft. The police were there. Other items were stolen, and the police were able to locate it.
Ah, good.
And he called us and said, "What do I need to do?" And that's exactly what we did.
Yeah. One of the interesting thing about mysterious disappearance. A lot of times you'll see where somebody, maybe a lady, goes in a public restroom and takes rings off to wash her hands, et cetera, on a trip. Is busy, gets in a hurry, walks out, leaves them laying on the sink or something, gets in the car, and then realizes it, turns around and comes back, and they're gone. Now, that's not theft. They want to call it theft. But what they did is they lost them, because if you find something and pick it up, you didn't steal it. You found it, and you picked it up.
But darn right.
But the other person lost it.
You should see Brian's jewelry collection.
Most
of it is from Rich Roth when Rich takes his wedding ring off.
And that's Brian, exactly.
And
then spins
Brian
it around
takes
on
it,
it,
and he has like six of them at home.
Holds it hostage and gets the money back. Exactly.
So that would count as not a theft, but a mysterious disappearance.
The other thing that happens: women at Thanksgiving time, and people take jewelry off to while they're working with food materials, dough, et cetera. Sometimes the ring goes down the disposal, goes out in the trash, et cetera. That's all mysterious disappearance, not theft.
Usually those things are highly sentimental, mm-hmm. so they're more distraught about the loss of the item than they are about the value of it, but certainly not in all cases.
Yeah. Well, and I've had those close calls before where I thought the ring was lost. And so there's really no way to count to compensate somebody for that sentimental value.
No, no.
And what if somebody has, you know, like an autograph collection, like they have valuable or baseball, you know, stuff that you're not going to, you can replace a ring. You can't replace.
You're not going to get another Mickey Mantle signed rookie card.
Exactly.
So all you can do is try to come up with, the same thing's true with antiques, if it's a special antique and you can't find it anymore. So all they can do is pay you as close as possible to what the approximate market value would be. And so I've had people with book collections, first editions, leather bounds, autograph books, or just autograph, people collect autographs. So all they can do, they need to categorize them, they need to take photos, everything to document what they had, how they had it. And so if something like that happens, then people who know that particular feel will help apply value to it. If I did have it, what would it be worth? Because you can't especially if it burns up, you can't reproduce books, so you can only try to replace the approximate value.
So let's talk about something a little bit different here. People start their own business, and a lot of times they'll initially be working out of their home. Let's say you set up one room as your home office, so that you've got waving the big red flag for the IRS there. With that one, what do you do for your insurance? Is that under your homeowner's insurance? Do you need to insure that separately in anything, in machines or tools you're using for the business? How does that work?
There is some coverage for business property in your home. There's limits to it off premises, and each company's going to have something different. So if you've got if you're a Mary Kay or LuLaRue or any of these other types of distributors, there's some coverage for your merchandise that you can get from them, or you can maybe see if this business person property will cover it.
Because it would be another, that'd be another special limit. Merchandise held in the home for sale or delivery. So somebody sold a lot of Mary Kay and they've got it all stacked. The shipment just came in. They haven't delivered it. It's going to be like $250 is all if a house burns down or it's stolen, because that's business merchandise held for sale or samples.
And so then do you insure that separately? That you can imagine
$250. You can increase that coverage limit.
Yeah, it doesn't go that far with your Mary Kay.
Right. Unless what Kim's saying, sometimes maybe the manufacturer offers that to you.
Yeah, and that's what happens. They'll call me and say, here's what my company will give me, and this is how much it costs. And then we look at what their homeowners has, what their homeowners would endorse on,
right,
with the option for that. And then it looks at, do you need a general business policy?
Explain that to us then.
Well, just having a general business policy is going to have business property and liability that's a separate policy in the name of the business.
And yeah. So then let's say, so not merchandise, but say tools that you use as part of the job. Maybe you're a subcontractor or something like that. Does that subject the same kind of $250 limit, or do you need? Does it go back to what we were talking about before? You list them out separately and say, hey, I've got $800 worth of tools here. I need to have them insured, you know, on their own.
Depends on if it's the loss occurs on the premises or away from the premises. And I had a case one time of people lived at the end of a cul-de-sac. They had a truck with tools and things. They parked on the cul-de-sac because they had guests in the driveway and somebody stole stuff out of the truck. Right. Sounds very technical, but legally they're not on premises. They're on public property, and their limit of business property off of premises came into play. Unless they had a business policy that insured everything. And the other thing about the business in the home, one of the biggest things we get into is we have to ask people, are you going to have people coming on your property to see this and visit you? If you do, you have a liability exposure that's not going to be covered under your standard homeowners. You need either an endorsement to your home or business policy, because liability is a big thing.
So people that for example, have a hair salon in their home, they're not having 100 people there, but they're having people coming in that are there more often than an average homeowner. So that's kind of what you're...
Higher risk of slip, trip, fall type deals, you know.
So, I mean, I'd say all of this highlights the need. If you have any questions about your homeowners, what's insured, what's not, how much, business property versus your own property, thing to do might be to call your insurance agent, possibly.
And review. That's what we try to get people to review. It's just the same reason you go to your doctor for a health checkup.
So
come in and review.
Every year, you would say?
Oh, yeah. And if it's a business situation, because of the fact that the first question in a homeowner's loss for things that could be used in business is, are you using this in business? Because if it is, they apply the business limit. And other people don't even realize that. They just figure it's my business,
it's
in my home, therefore it's covered, and it's
not. That could be awkward. So you lost your leather corset and whip. Were you using those in your business?
That's right.
That's a great way to end, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, so anybody wants to get in touch with you, Kim or Chip, what do they need to do? Where do they find you?
Kim Gardner, 220 Avalon Square in Madison Heights.
Chip Harvey, Timberlake Road. Right next to McDonald's.
They couldn't be prouder to be on this show.
Absolutely.